Yo everyone, welcome back to Brand New Techish. Abadesi, my co-host, is chillaxing again, but I have an amazing guest. I'm actually real gassed to have this guest. This is somebody I've been trying to reach out to for a long time. He has a background in radio. If you're listening from the States, which I know a lot of you are, he's basically like Hot 97, Breakfast Club dude that's pivoted into futurist, technology, investor, media entrepreneur, all kinds of stuff. So I'm really excited to have on Reese Parker. So Reese, thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate you, brother, for coming on, man.
Oh, that's a great intro, Michael. I appreciate it as well. We have been meaning to connect for so long. It's like incredibly overdue. So I'm very flattered and honored that you wanted me on, because we've gone back and forth from DMs. Like, should we go for lunch? Let's catch up. Let's go for a drink. And you know them ones you never actually do. Whereas this, it's like, let's just up and talk about everything. And here we are.
Yeah, that's dope. So part of the reason why I wanted to have you on is because I just found your journey so fascinating. I kind of touched upon it just now. But essentially, you were on radio. You had the dream job. You were basically playing the music that we all grew up listening to, hip-hop, R&B. It was primarily a station that, you know, cultivates and plays black music. And you decided to kind of leave. And I know it was probably a lot slower over in real time, but like essentially, what prompted that decision and what was attracting you to the kind of futurist tech investor type thing that you're doing now?
Yeah, that's so I actually think to answer that question, we kind of have to go back to your last episode of the podcast. So when I listened to your last episode, I know you had the journalist from Dominique.
From TechCrunch. Yeah, Dominique. Yeah.
From TechCrunch. And it was really interesting. I think you guys missed out one part, which was you asked her like, okay, what do you see your future in journalism and how's the industry? And she's like, it's kind of like the Titanic, it's beautiful. And there was a chart and I could send it to you, and it was actually from ARK Invest. They did a research chart. I tweeted it out the other day, and it was the cost of written word, how much it had gone down. And ever since when GPT-3 and 4 came out, it literally was like, it was going down ever so slightly. And then as soon as that got released, it literally went boom. And it kind of went from like $2, $2 per word to like 0.3 cents per word. And I think that as an industry, and you set it up so nicely when you was talking to her, you was like, I've seen like a lot of journalists get like, what's the word? Not basically let go.
Laid off?
Yeah, laid off. Yeah, you're like, I've seen a lot of laid off. Yeah, yeah. Like, what's that like in the industry? And I think that is because of the price of written word has gone down so much ever since these large language models have been released, that I could literally be like, write me an article in the style of XYZ. Like, why do you need to pay journalists these salaries? Just get them off and have two people in the writing room instead of like 10, and have like the editor do the writing as well. And that's kind of a similar thing that I believe is about to happen and is happening in radio and traditional television. So, you know, I was on the Titanic as well, but you know, I'm gonna get on one of those boats, and obviously I let the women and children go first. But as soon as the women and children
you're Kate Winslet, basically, you're gonna survive.
I'm jumping on one of those boats. I'm not trying to like go down and do a DiCaprio, like I'm gonna jump on. So the industry's changing so much. Something I predict. I just think it's the end game, and things are going so fast, and the price of like spoken word is going to go down. So instead of like you needing paying like a DJ whatever amount, like why don't you just have one live DJ on a station? The rest can be pre-recorded, and then if you're pre-recording, then you can be able to use software to just change that voice and then suddenly do like the overnights. Like I saw a friend who recently took like a job as like the 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. DJ on weekends on his station. I'm like, I mean, fair enough, but like, especially a slot like that, I'm like, damn. So it's really hard, because a lot of people in that industry as well, it's and that's such a fair thing. Like, what do you do? Where do you go? What do you get into? And I think I was quite fortunate and lucky that really from the start of 2020, and I'd admit, like I got caught up in, you know, everyone, like you said, kind of off air, like actually not everyone is into investing and understanding like owning parts of business and how to get out of a certain situation. And I got heavily into it. So from the start of 2020, and I didn't leave radio until 2023, April. So for 3 years, like my head was completely checked out. And I was working with like a producer at the time on radio who, who was very into investing as well. So in a 3-hour radio show, 2 hours and 50 minutes were spent on us doing analysis on macro, the market, and the companies that we were into. because I weren't learning anything either. You know, it's really hard to,
right.
It's really hard at the start, some of that radio, because it's like how to talk up to a record, how to speak to people as if it's like just you and them, how to tone of voice, light and shade, black and white, like change so many things. It's super hard. But when I got it, I was like, I can like kind of, not in a way that's like, oh, egotistical, I'm the best radio DJ. Not at all. But like, I just knew how to, I could walk in, not even with a script, and do a 3-hour radio show. Like, I just got it. So I could spend time. We just spend time analyzing things. And I like said it in like an interview that I did afterwards where, and I didn't really care, like, oh, and that's no, like, Central C's amazing artist, but like Central C's on a red carpet and he wears a tracksuit. Let's talk about that on the show today. Like, I'd be like, I really don't care what tracksuit he's worn. like, how can you care when Elon's sending reusable rockets out of orbit and landing again in the middle of the ocean? Like, when they're literally editing people's DNA and curing diseases, like how is that comparable? And that was a really hard shift. So naturally, like when that happens, you kind of attract different people in your life, different things, different me and you connecting around that time. You kind of attract different people, yeah. And you go on a different path, and that different path really opened my eyes. And I did like 10,000 hours in a space of like 3 years and just went super into like exponential technology and understanding where the world's going. And I was like, I need even more of this. So I need to change from my day to day into doing this. But I still really enjoy broadcast. So I host a show on Sky Sports NFL for the Jacksonville Jaguars UK team, which is it's so much fun to do because I love sports. I love NFL. I still work with the BBC a lot. I recently did like a BBC travel show. We went to the Caribbean, the Dominican Republic. And
amazing.
Bahamas and did a documentary out there. So I really love traditional broadcast still, but to put all your eggs in traditional broadcast and go like, if I was 18 again, I'm 29 now, if I was to go, I'm going to be a radio DJ, I would go, oh my God, please consider that, you know. So that's really like my journey up until now.
That's amazing how like even the most prestigious and amazing jobs, when people get into them, they realize, oh, it's just a job, basically. And even that person is like, I want to aspire to more, or even I want to do something where, you know, I can grow. Even though people will be like, bro, like, you're in BBC Radio One Extra. Like, how can you lead? There's like thousands of people like queuing up. Like, but at the same time, I completely resonate with that because
are there thousands of people lining up now? Ask an under 25-year-old, what, like,
yeah, it's true.
They want to be a YouTuber. They don't want to be, I want to be on Radio One. Like, and you can see it in the industry as well. Like, I judged it on, I looked on, there's a list that the BBC does, right? And a lot of the radio broadcasts come under that. It's like the highest earners. No one on that list is under 35.
Interesting.
So yes, it's not all about money. You love the position. Of course you love the position, but also cost of living rises. You're ambitious. You want to, you know, get capital to be able to live the life that you want to live for your future version of you. But no one on the list is under 35. So they're not writing the checks like they used to. That's usually a sign that the industry's changing for the worse. Same with journalists. Back in the day, journalists would go out for dinner at Soho House and they'd all have it on the expense tab at the Telegraph, and they'd all go, who are you? I'm the editor of the sports section. Oh, wow. So you get to interview Jose Mourinho. No one cares the editor of the sports section compared to like Pat McAfee or Filthy Fellas or any of those. Like, that's who people care about now, not James Johnson at the Times Sport. Like, it's
I hear you.
Yeah,
I hear you. No, you make sense there. Where I really was like invested in your story and your journey was when I think you were tweeting about how like yo, I was thinking about buying a house. Like, I was, you know, I'm at the right age. I'm probably mid to late 20s. I'm thinking to myself, I've got my money stacked up. You know, I've done well for myself. Let's invest in property. And then actually you said, hold on, pause. You said, and this is actually during like low interest rates as well. And you were still just like, hold on, pause. Is there a better use of my capital? So why don't you like let the techish people them who are listening right now know, like, what did you decide to do instead of buying a house?
Yeah, that was fools up. So I'm from a place called Gravesend, and like you go down that route that most of us do, right? You get advised if you have like any, if you get anywhere near to like a small mortgage, and it wasn't a huge amount. It was like, well, everything's relative, but it was like a 1-2 bedroom flat in Gravesend. I'd saved up there. Cause at the time I don't really know. I don't actually spend money on things, you know, like I, it was only holidays experiences. And so I just saved money. And that's like, until I was like 23, I was living in credit card and overdraft. Like that, I didn't know what being positive in your account actually was, or had ever seen it, basically. So then when I got my first radio show, and then from the radio show, you get like brand stuff and you can expand it. I realized like my biggest like superpower, if I look back and really like analyze myself, like self-reflect, is being able to connect with anyone at any time, anywhere in the world. And that really led itself into being obviously radio broadcasting. It makes a lot of sense. You communicate with people, have guests on for a wide amount, and you can still make them like open up, feel comfortable. So that was my thing. So that's where I was like, okay, I could get into radio. And then when I got into radio, I was like, well, I'm not just going to be on One Extra and just talk about like music. Like that would be very limiting. So I want to do sports, running, healthcare. I want to do everything in a broadcast lens, so I could do like all these different work with all these different companies and like tell their story through being able to connect with the audiences from black, white, 60-year-olds, 15-year-olds, whatever. So through doing that, we'll have this deposit. And then I remember my friend who's a real estate agent got me a mortgage broker to come around my house, and he came around and I was like, oh yes, I'd love to get your help on trying to get a deposit for a flat. And he said to me, okay, so what's your salary? And my actual salary at the time, because it kind of like didn't count the freelance work, was awful. Because I was just doing like one radio show a week. You know, like people forget, you're not getting paid you're not getting paid like $500,000 to do radio anymore.
So hold on, you weren't a millionaire?
I weren't a millionaire, no. Sadly that, yeah.
Okay, go on.
So yeah, I'd saved that. And then he was like, well, you can't actually get a mortgage on this flat because you don't earn enough in your salary. So I was like, oh damn it, like that's what they all say though, you need to get a mortgage, that's being happy, right? And get married and have two kids and live on the same road that your mum and dad did. So I couldn't get that, so I literally went on Google, Reddit, YouTube, and typed in like, what do I do with XYZ? And then it was like, invest it, this is what you need to do, invest, use 10% of your money every month and invest it. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went down a rabbit hole a bit, and then I came across a video which was from Kathy Wood, CEO of Ark Invest, and it was a video on it. She was talking at the Singularity, I think, Peter Diamandis's conference, I think Singularity conference, and she was speaking on that. She was talking about six different industries that are all converging and the world that we're about to live in. I watched that video. Something with that video completely clicked on me. It was actually when she was talking about electric vehicles and how Tesla specifically will have autonomous vehicles, and how if you owned a Tesla vehicle, you'd be able to go at home, chill at your house, send that car out, and it would be a Uber for you. And that's when I went, oh my God, of course, this is completely obvious. And then the next day, I already had a brokerage account, but I hadn't really, it was just like, I haven't really bought businesses, stocks per se. And then the next day I basically put like 3/4 of that into Tesla on a solo bet, not inside an ISA, which is the biggest regret I've ever had in my life.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's like the worst mistake. And then that was on June the 14th, day after my mum's birthday in 2020. Then I just like saw this mental low interest rate fall, stimmy checks being released. And I saw my position just like 5-6x, and I was like, oh my God. I remember showing my mum my account like what? And she was like, sell it, you crazy. I was like, no. but because I had the skin in the game, like it made me double down my research. And then I just spent hours in researching all these different companies in those converging technology sectors that Kathy and the ARC team had done the research on. But then it taught me like a lesson, like, oh my God, like how many people, obviously it's just my opinion, but would waste their money on getting like a mortgage, and then you're basically taking on this loan of like 300,000 or whatnot. And I was like, but like AI is probably just gonna, your mortgage is like 30-year mortgage, right? What, you really think you're gonna have a job in 30 years? Are you crazy? You're not gonna pay that off. So I was like, this is just pretty stupid. I don't really agree with this. So I want my capital to work for me. Like what, I can get Elon Musk sleeping on a Tesla factory floor, and I'm in bed sleeping in my bed, and he's working with my money. Like, you can do that. Like, it just opened my eyes up, you know.
Yeah, you know what? The mortgage thing, it's almost like a religion in the UK. And I think in the US, it's pretty similar as well. Like, you are meant to go and buy a house. And I understand it. Don't get it twisted. Because if you're renting in London or New York, for example, the rental market is so cutthroat. It probably does make sense. Yo, let me get some peace of mind and security. If you're outside that context where property value doesn't necessarily skyrocket like it does in London and New York, and you're living somewhere quieter, can I say to you that's the absolute priority in your life? I probably wouldn't say that. But at the same time, it's a case-by-case basis. And a lot of people take it with religious zeal in terms of like, no, this is what you have to do. Because their mom probably bought a house in like 1965 and bought it for like two strawberries, and it turned into $1 million. So everyone's still trying to follow that exact same, playbook. And it's like, bro, like, let's think it through. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying, oh, everyone go buy, you know, one stock like you did, for example, but like, please look through the different alternatives and options if you are in a different context where maybe like you're not in London, you're not in New York, and it doesn't necessarily make the most sense to kind of just buy something in, you know, in the middle of nowhere, right? Renting can be okay in certain cities, in certain contexts. I completely agree with that. But yeah, so that's a fascinating story. So obviously at that time, Tesla, I went and looked back. I was like, Tesla was around $30. Per share around that time. I don't know if that's when you got in, but I know at least around kind of 2021, 2020 COVID time. Yeah. And at one point it went to like $300. So essentially, if anyone rode that, that was a 10x increase. You put in 10 grand, you've got 100 grand. You put in 100 grand, you've got a mil. And there was lots of articles of like, yo, I'm a millionaire because of Tesla. I'm a millionaire because of Elon. It's obviously come back down now again. A little bit. It's probably gone to like 140. So if you came in early, you're still blessed. You're still 100%. I did amazing. Probably not as amazing as you would like to have done. How do you feel about? Because I know you've talked vocally about on Twitter about, you know, you're a Tesla for life. You're holding all the way basically. How do you have the nerves to keep holding onto a stock when you've just seen it go down again? Like, is it research? Is it belief in Elon? And just for context, on this show, we definitely haven't always been praiseworthy of him on a personal level, I'm willing. Yeah. We don't like him as a person, but me personally with Elon, I've always, my journey with Elon has always been quirky entrepreneur who's super talented, who's like leans right wing on a personal level. That's how I always saw him. Amazing products. I always respected him. I'm an entrepreneur myself. I cannot deny if you've built three unicorns, you're a G straight up. But the more I've seen of him on X and what he said, I think on a personal level, he's a piece of shit. But at the same time, I'm also a businessman. I'm a money guy. So if someone comes to me and is like, yo, is this an investment? I could talk about it from a completely detached perspective. And that's probably the conversation I want to have with you, because there's people listening to this who, you know, are coming from our kind of world, our kind of background, who want to know, like, where do I put my money? How do I invest? How do I decide whether a stock is a good decision? And that's a conversation that I wanted to have. So when Tesla went from 310 to 140, how did you decide to, like, stay firm, like, and to keep doubling down, basically?
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Nice, a lot to unpack there, Michael. Shall we talk about the Elon thing on a personal level, or is it pretty pointless to...
I mean, we can. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying horrible person, therefore never buy their stock. there are some people who have that perspective of like, you know, I view capitalism as a way to kind of vote with my dollars. So you can view it in that way. But I also understand if someone's like, listen, I'm trying to build generational wealth. This guy's obviously building a great company. I'm looking to back that. So we can. What is your thoughts? Because forget even what I'm saying. You must hear it a lot from people now saying to you, like,
yeah,
well, how are you so bullish on this guy, basically? Like, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because, like, the majority of people that I speak to hate, in the UK, like, your everyday person doesn't like Elon. And I remember speaking to my girlfriend when we actually first got, like, together, and a big part, obviously, like, when you're after, like, 25 onwards, you're kind of like, oh, what life do we want to build together? And obviously, I'm like, you're kind of with a little bit of a degenerate who has a lot of his capital in one company and concentrates his bets very highly. So I'm going down this path. And like, obviously, I really want you to join me. And she was like, well, Elon's dad had an emerald mind. Elon's is evil. Elon's done all this stuff. And it like, we kind of like handled it really, like really well, and we like got into the bit like, okay, let's first like take all emotion out of this conversation because we're just going to have an argument. So like, send me any data, send me any facts, and then the data that she would send, there was always like quite a bias, whether it's like the publication that it's coming from or who funds that publication. And afterwards we were kind of like both had a really big learning curve. I was like, wow, I was like very heavily biased Elon because a lot of my capital's in there. So I need to like kind of don't take things just verbatim as well. And she was like, that's pretty interesting. I didn't actually know that some things are just a complete lie about this person because it literally does sell headlines and makes clicks. And that's what most, you know, mass media needs. You need advertisers. So you need clicks on your thing. Elon's like the clickable person right now. So she actually ended up, she now holds Tesla in her portfolio. But I think overall, you have to think of the companies that and industries that Elon is disrupting. You know, you start disrupting the oil industry, you're probably not going to make great friends. And you disrupt like energy as a whole, you're not really going to make great friends either. You disrupt 100 years of the legacy auto market in Detroit, you're going to have unions and people that are going to be after you who know some very powerful people. I'm not trying to like say conspiracies and stuff like that. Like, you're a disruptor, right?
I hear you though. That makes sense.
He's a natural disruptor. So you're going to, that's billions, if not trillions of dollars that you are disrupting to make new businesses. And now you're going after media, right? So let's say X, for example, what X is doing and probably what it will become. Like, I think if you're a betting person, you're going to place a bet. Are you going to bet on Elon to be successful with X or not successful with X? I mean, he sends rockets to space. He built a whole new type of electric vehicle. He put an implant in a human's chip and now a quadriplegic chip. And now you can now control things with this chip in your mind. You really think a social media platform he's not going to be able to do? He cut like 75% of the staff and there's more users using it. And like everyone, so there's, and so you attack like the media market, obviously you're going to have 90% of the media market go against you. So a lot of things that they say about Elon, you know, blatantly just isn't true at points. And some of it obviously is at the same time. So you have to take both of those with a pinch of salt. I see it as he's a disruptor. He's a visionary. Visionaries and disruptors are usually a little bit quirky. Like if you go back and there's a great book that Walter Isaacson, who did the Elon Musk recent book, also did the Leonardo da Vinci book.
Yeah.
Leonardo da Vinci was flipping wild. You know, Elon's the modern day Leonardo da Vinci. These people aren't necessarily normal. They fluctuate. They go from, you know, Elon was very close friends with Obama. He was a Democrat for years, clearly had moved on and moved parties, and he calls himself more in the center. And I guess you could argue that on a political basis. I mean, he hasn't outright said he's going for Trump. He hasn't outright said that he's not going to vote for a Democrat. I think he's kind of like playing both sides. But like you said, clearly a lot more on the right leaning, will probably vote for a Republican, in my opinion, or RFK, Robert Kennedy.
RFK, yeah, RFK. Yeah.
So overall, I think if we're going to base him as a human, there's a lot going on there from so many different angles, and you've really got to be careful with where the source of the information is you're coming from. So I hope that kind of answered it, but maybe it didn't, so forgive me. But being able to answer your actual question, being able to hold a stock when it goes down, that's just pure conviction. That's putting in the hours. That's understanding exponential technology, which humans just can't imagine. They cannot imagine. Mm-hmm. I can show you Waymo. A good example is where we live, right? You're in London.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in London, right? We see zero autonomous vehicles. So when I go to drinks and I speak to a friend and it inevitably gets onto Tesla somehow, I'm like, yeah, autonomous vehicles. They're like, yeah, what, 10 years? I'm like, do you know Waymo in San Francisco, that they're actually doing autonomous vehicles right, using LiDAR, different to Tesla using vision, but they're doing autonomous vehicles right now, and it's geofenced. But it's happening right now. If you get a Tesla in San Francisco, you can go A to B, and you don't even have it. The robotaxis are basically live now. The software is that good. It's happening. But until a human being sees it in real life and gets in one themselves, so you've only got people from San Francisco, parts of America that have been in it, seen it, and understand it. The rest of the world is like, no way, it's never going to happen. So what I see as an opportunity, people see as, the companies, the stock's going to go down. And you've got to think like financial analysts, so where a lot of that goes into like CNBC and then on their finance media. Elon has done another tweet. Full self-driving is never going to happen. So when Elon recently said, where the Reuters article, where it's like they're scrapping the Model 2, the car that's meant to be the cheaper car, mass market EV car, for straight robot taxi. Yeah. So they just have the autonomous vehicle, won't have the Model 2. That, like, you saw when that article went out, the stock went down by like 6%. And that's what made me realize, oh, these analysts and hedge funds don't actually believe he's going to solve autonomy. And for me,
right,
that's where the opportunity is. Like, and Chris Benisky, big like crypto voice and VC, said like, the sicker you feel, the more you should buy. If you have conviction.
Interesting. And okay. Conviction. Okay.
That stuck with me. And you listen to, there's a great book like Richer, Wiser, Happier by William Green, who brilliant author. And he interviews a bunch of different hedge fund managers, and everyone makes their biggest bets if they're a contrarian bet when everyone else isn't believing what's about to happen. You know, and I don't think you do this every time. There's only moments in your life. This may literally be my only one that I do it with, and because you're going to eventually blow up if you keep doing. It's gone down 70%. I'm telling you, this is the one. But you just have to look at like the crypto cycle. It's the same thing. It all matches the business cycle. We go through these same things. And, you know, if you look at Tesla, Q1 is always a terrible year for car sales. Interest rates have gone up. No one can finance a vehicle. But this underlining Optimus humanoid robot they're building, energy that they're dominating in as well. When I say dominating, but that's exponentially growing that part of the business. And then you have the autonomous vehicle side as well. It's like a startup that has all these different startups. It's like a company that has all these different startups underneath. But yeah,
within
you basically just need to have conviction in what you're owning. And then I can go to sleep. I go to sleep absolutely, absolutely fine.
And that conviction is born through basically research, doing your homework, et cetera, basically. As in, know what you're doing and know what you're talking about and understand the business down to, you know, a fine tooth comb. That makes complete sense. Just to quickly touch base on the negative Elon stuff, I definitely agree there are certain criticisms of him that are born out of either fear of what he's doing. So if someone says, oh, Elon said that he would have self-driving cars by now and it hasn't come, and that means that he's a charlatan, I think that's complete BS. He's obviously proven that he's not a charlatan by building all those companies. And a lot of this cutting edge technology is fucking hard. It's bloody hard, isn't it? So you're not going to get that right. Where I've always, and also what you said about the Walter Isaacson thing, completely true. Steve Jobs was an absolute asshole. Steve Jobs was not a nice guy. You read the Steve Jobs book, you're like, I would not want to work with him. He would just, you know, run up to people in the lift and just like fire them, shout at them, abusive, all this kind of stuff. So there is an element where to be that top level entrepreneur, you probably are, don't have like all your screws. Your screws are a bit loose, basically. You're not a normal person. My thing with Elon has just been when I've watched him on X, I'm just like, bro, like you're saying some mad anti-black stuff. Like I think there was a recent tweet where someone was like, oh, black people are 900 times more likely to kill you than a white person. And he just went like, he just liked it and gave a thumbs up emoji. I'm like, bro, like you're making it hard here, man, to defend you. Like you're making it real hard. And we talked about lawsuits at the factory where there's been like, you know, allegations of racism. Of course it's allegations, so we don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
So that's where I struggle. But the other things you mentioned about, you know, he's a charlatan or he's, you know, there's people out to get him and be really hard on him because he's a threat to their industry. I do agree with that. He just has made it hard to defend him a lot more harder. Because actually on this show, I was probably more lenient towards him and my co-host Abadesi was much more anti-Elon. And in the end, I was like, yeah, you're kind of right. He's not the greatest guy. But on this episode, I don't want to get too bogged down on it. I think I've already done too much in it. And I appreciate you focusing on the kind of tech and the business, because I think it's important for people to hear. I don't want echo chamber. I don't want this to be some anti-Elon show. I want this to be like where you can come and learn and grow. And I think your story of kind of like going all in, it's a fascinating story. Like it's a straight up amazing story. So I appreciate you kind of going in and kind of defending like your thesis and stuff like that. So when it comes to owning the stock, and this is probably my last question on Tesla, but when it comes to owning the stock, do you never think to yourself, let me just diversify? I've got a great win. Like, can I just put some of this money into like the S&P 500? Does that never cross your mind?
My question would be, why would I? So like, I watch a lot of Real Vision. I say like a mentor of mine is Raoul Powell. And
yes, very smart guy.
Yeah, mentor in a sense of like, kind of like, because he's from the UK and he has taught me like a lot. I consider him like a mentor. We don't like go on the phone and stuff, but he talks about like the debasement of money, your money, and how that is basically happening. Like you need to basically get gains of like 12% of the year to keep up with the debasement due to all the debt that the government's in. So the S&P 500 returns just aren't going to get it. They'll break you even, but they aren't going to get you actually anywhere. Like we said it at the start of the show, right? You know how much it costs to rent in London. You know how much it is to buy a house in London. You know how much it is to buy a house in the majority part of like Western, more like your thriving nations, for lack of a better word, your Paris,
yeah,
London, Oslo, New York, LA, like super expensive. So you have to find an alternative which is going to make your net worth outperform the debasement of the currency. So, you know, in those areas, it goes down to crypto and technology. So I find it pointless buying the S&P because there's only like 8 companies in the S&P that actually drive the S&P. You take out like Nvidia, Meta, Amazon, Microsoft, Tesla, Apple. It's like, it's basically companies that are being disrupted and just that are actually like growing at like 4%, 5% a year. They're actually not doing anything. You're not better off by doing that. Like NASDAQ, yeah, you kind of are because mainly technology focused, but I don't get that. Like those returns just aren't, you compare the S&P to any of those ones I mentioned in the last 5 years, you'll see the stark difference. Even like the QQQ, I guess is like more of a, more tech focused on those companies, but I've always been to like, if you want to like create the wealth, I've always thought concentrate your portfolio to get there and then diversify. Like I'm not saying to go all in every, like go all in, make a great win, let's go all in again. I'm like, you know, I come from very like humble means, so it's like I have no wealth, so I need to concentrate what I have to get there, and then I'll diversify. That's my kind of way of thinking about portfolio construction.
Interesting. Okay. I understand. I think, you know, for the average person listening, obviously, who probably doesn't have the time to do all the great research into a specific company, I still do think just putting your money into the S&P 500 is like, it's a no-brainer in the sense that like reality is 90% of people are just sitting on cash. their money is getting eroded by inflation. And if you don't have time to research companies, and if you don't have time to
do those deep dives,
you're better off just putting. You know what, man? I think it depends on who you're talking to. If you're like a single mum raising two kids, and maybe you've got a decent job, like I know my sister who basically is in that predicament. You know, she don't have time. Like I'll be honest with you, unless she just takes it on what I'm telling her. But I wouldn't want to have that pressure on me to be like, yo, just copy me, because I might be wrong. So we have to all hold our hands up and say whatever position we have, there's a certain percentage chance that we're incorrect. So true.
Yeah.
I think I would always just say, like, probably my personal perspective is like, just put it in the index fund. But I do respect your kind of your conviction and the research that you've done. And I think the reality is, to be right, you have to be contrarian to do really, really well. So me disagreeing with you, or not necessarily, or pushing back, is probably a good sign for you anyway. Like, do you get what I'm saying? As in, like, if everyone was like, yeah, this is 100% the truth, then it probably wouldn't have those outsized returns, because all of the value would be eroded away, because everyone would be invested in it, and it would just be kind of like, you know, a consensus bet, which is not where kind of a lot of the great returns are in investing, basically. Thank you everyone for listening. That's been at Techish Pod. Hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram, follow the TikTok, subscribe on YouTube, of course, follow Reese. I'll put all the links to his amazing stuff and documentaries and work and media company all in the show notes. And yeah, thank you for listening, everyone.
Peace.